Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop from Washington. I am your host, Mark Levine, reporting live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. The Supreme Court has lately been doing nothing. I guess that shouldn't surprise many of us, given that it is irrevocably split into its four liberal and four conservatives. That's the reason why the Republicans have refused to put in really a very moderate judge, a Democrat, but definitely a very moderate rather than a very liberal progressive Democrat, the chief judge of the second most important court in the United States, the D.C. Court of Appeals, Merrick Garland. They won't even give him a hearing. He's in his 60s. Frankly, he's probably the weakest pick that Obama could pick. They won't give him even a hearing. Now the Republicans are saying that the reason they won't give them a hearing is because they want the voters to decide who's president. But if the voters decide Hillary Clinton's going to be president, then they're going to rush and put him in a lame duck session. I hope we will persuade the president, if and when Hillary Clinton wins in November, to withdraw the nomination, to say, Republicans, you said you wanted the voters to decide. Well, they've decided. And to let Hillary Clinton pick. Merrick Garland's a good guy. But let's pick, a very progressive judge in his or her 40s. That might be good. Might be on the court for a long while. Meanwhile, the court being divided 4-4, the way the rulings go is basically when there's a 4-4 decision, eight members of the court without the tie vote, then the lower court stands. The ruling of the lower court stands, which means that you can have different laws and different interpretations of the Constitution depending on where you live in the country. In one area of the country, for example, it might be legal to deport people who are the Dreamers, who are grew up in America, came here when they were two or three, only speak English. And in other areas of the country, it might be illegal to do that because the Obama, under his executive orders, have said that he does not want to deport young people who didn't come here of their own accord and haven't committed any crime other than accompanying their parents when they were six. Hardly a crime. Indeed, can't be. You can, in fact, have no criminal liability or legal liability when you take an act before you're the age of seven. So you could see where you have enforcement. You have the immigration forces in Texas, and they're chasing an immigrant. And instead of crossing over the Mexican border, he simply crosses over the New Mexican border, and he's home free. Kind of like slave states and free states all over again, where we could even have an underground railroad from Texas, where the Fifth Circuit has said that that immigrants have no rights, to New Mexico, where the Eighth, the Tenth Circuit have said that they do have rights. Crazy, I know. But again, the Republicans would rather have inconsistent laws all across the country, inconsistent interpretations of the Constitution, than to give the American people what they voted for, namely the President of the United States and his right to choose a judge of his choice. Meanwhile, there's all kinds of rulings across the country that, again, are inconsistent. Today, the D.C. Circuit, that's the same one that Merrick Garland is the judge of. He's actually the chief judge of the D.C. Court of Appeals, which is just over the D.C. Circuit. But the D.C. Circuit has given inconsistent standards on the nation's gun laws, on whether or not D.C. can require you to have a reason to have a gun. The gun nuts say that you don't need a reason to own a gun. You should just get a gun. Everybody gets a gun. Kind of like everyone in the Oprah audience getting a car, except that, well, it could kill you. And, you know, they think three-year-olds should get guns. Terrorists should get guns. They think that rapists and murderers all should get guns. They think that ISIS should not be able to fly on American planes, but they should be able to buy AK-47s at your local gun store. And, of course, D.C. and Maryland have very strict gun laws to stop a lot of this nonsense. Unfortunately, just across the river is my home state, the Commonwealth of Virginia, where they have extremely lax gun laws, where it's very, very easy to sell a gun to a terrorist. It's actually legal for a terrorist to walk into a gun store. You can be like, kill Americans, I hate America, I support Osama bin Laden, death to America, I'd like that AK-47, please, and that 100-bullet magazine. Thank you very much. Yeah, I'm on the no-fly list. Yeah, I've been told by the State Department that I am too dangerous to fly on a plane because I might use a plastic knife to harm the passenger next to me. Yeah, I'll take 100 AK-47s, please. Got an army to build. Give me thousands of bullets. I'm not saying I'm going to kill Americans. I'm just saying death to America and go Al-Qaeda. And you can just buy your AK-47s in Virginia, cross the border, because there are no border checks at the Potomac River. None. Even though we might need them more at the Potomac River than the Rio Grande. After all, there are not that many dangerous Mexicans coming into this country, but there are lots and lots of dangerous people who buy guns in Virginia crossing the border, the Potomac River, every day to the Northeast. In fact, in New York City, more guns are found out of state from Virginia than any other state. Yep, not New Jersey, not Pennsylvania, not the states that border New York. They come from Virginia. We are the arms dealer to the gangs and the mass murderers of the Northeast. Thank you, Virginia. Obviously, as a Virginia delegate, I'm doing my best to stop this kind of nonsense. But the Supreme Court, well, they won't be around to do that because they're 4-4. So, again, we could have nice, inconsistent gun laws. Because after all, the Constitution says, in the Second Amendment, that a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms, serving in that militia, shall not be infringed. Okay, I added the word serving in that militia, but obviously that's what the first part of it means. After all, the Second Amendment does not say the right of individuals to keep and bear arms for any reason shall not be infringed. I know the gun nuts want it to say that. And if they do, they should seek to modify the Constitution. See if they can get 2/3 of both houses of Congress, 3/4 of the state, to strike out the first offending words of the Second Amendment, the one that says that a well-regulated militia be necessary to the security of a free state. They really, really hate the whole first half of that amendment. But, of course, that's not what it says. And yet, the four conservatives on the court, along with Antonin Scalia, in a opinion written by Scalia that, frankly, makes no sense whatsoever as a matter of law or logic or even basic grammar, said, in effect, the founders did not mean what they said. They were drunk on meat at the time. The thing they wrote about the militia, they didn't mean it. They wrote it down in an amendment. The amendment has about 30 words, and it's the first half. But they just were wasting space. It was a mere preamble. And even though they were amending the Constitution in the Bill of Rights, they were actually changing it, they really didn't mean it. They didn't mean it. The Constitution is merely advisory. That's what Scalia believes. I can choose what I want it to mean. And even I won't say that everyone has the right to bear arms, because if you ignore the part about the well-regulated militia, and you just look and say that the right of the people to keep and bear arms should not be infringed, and you take out the word people, which is what the Constitution says, because it's a collective right, and put in individuals, the right of individuals to keep and bear arms should not be infringed, then you'd have to go and give Charles Manson a gun. You'd have to give everyone locked up in America a gun. After all, it doesn't have an exception for convicted felons. It doesn't have an exception for people in jail. Let's give all the prisoners guns. If you read the Constitution the way the gun nuts do, then you have to give everybody a gun, not just your infants, not just your toddlers who they want to arm, but you have to give it to prisoners. Now, of course, it doesn't work if you read it the way I read it, the way the founders read it, the idea that you have a collective right, the people, not persons. By the way, those are different words. You know that, right? The Constitution is very clear about that. Collective rights, the right to practice a religion, which is a collective right because religions are things that more than one person believes in. The right to assemble, to petition for redress of grievances. Those are all rights of the people. Because a one-person petition isn't very long, and you're really not assembling very much if you're there alone. When the Constitution wants to recognize individual rights, it uses the word person. You know, you have the right to be secure in your person. That's the Fourth Amendment, in your persons. Every one of us has the right to be secure in our persons. That means we have an individual right. You don't have a collective right not to be searched. You have an individual right not to be searched. That's why if they want to individually search you, they have to get a warrant. And the warrant has to name you and specify what part of you needs to be searched. That's why the Constitution uses the word persons and not people. Because the right of the people would be a collective right. The right of us to practice our religion together, to assemble together, to bear arms in a well-regulated militia together. Like, say, the National Guard. That's a well-regulated militia. So the Supreme Court went off the rails. They overturned 220 years of ruling that the Second Amendment applies to militias and said, nope, nope, everybody gets a gun. Everybody gets a gun. You get a gun. You get a gun. You murderer in prison, you get a gun. You terrorist, you get a gun. You two-year-old, get a gun. You, the violently insane, we're going to get you an AK-47. We're going to get you and why restrict it to semi-automatic guns? Why not just have fully automatic machine guns? Those are guns, right? No restriction. Constitutional right. Gotta give Charles Manson a machine gun. And if he points it at the guard and shoots them, well, put him in the same jail he's in and give him another gun. That's, of course, the logical conclusion. Now, no one in their right mind believes that the Second Amendment confers that right. Even Antonin Scalia said, yeah, I think it's got an individual right. I'm going to ignore that whole militia clause, but I, Antonin Scalia, king of the world, I'm going to say what I think is okay and what's not okay. And no, it has no basis in the Constitution, no basis in law. No, but it is what I want, and I get what I want. I'm wearing a robe. I chose the president in 2000. I also get to choose which guns Americans want. The voters don't get to decide. The voters in D.C. don't get to decide. They decided in a very urban area, they want very strict gun checks. Nope, nope, nope. I get to decide. And I think this is okay, and I think that's not okay. I think this is okay. Yeah, screw the voters. Yeah, they don't have any rights. I decide. Well, Scalia, and I'm very glad about this. I'm sorry, but it's hard to be, I don't want to really cheer a man's death, but for the sake of America, it is very good that Antonin Scalia is no longer on the court. Because Antonin Scalia's death will save others' lives. The fact that he is gone means that now others can have decent gun safety laws. So what will happen with the Supreme Court? Well, until a new judge is picked, we're going to have inconsistent laws all over the place. We're going to have places where the voters vote one way and the court rules another way, and then the lower courts will decide. It'll be completely inconsistent, like this recent D.C. Court of Appeals decision. Actually, I think it's a lower district court decision that stopped D.C. from enforcing its gun laws, even though there's another D.C. district court decision that said that the District of Columbia is just fine with its gun laws. So which is it? We can't know. The reason why Republicans don't want a Supreme Court is because they want to appease their donors and the people who believe there should be no restrictions on gun laws, just like they want to appease the people who want to punish immigrants. They want a conservative court. This is what conservatism is about these days. But if they can't get what they want through votes, they can get what they want just by buying people off. And so we see in a local law school in Virginia, it's going to be renamed from George Mason Law School to the Antonin Scalia School of Law. Ass Law, if you will. Some are calling it A-S-S-O-L, which you can spell that one out yourself. And they're doing it just by paying people off. I'm going to talk about that after the break. If you want to join in, it's 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back right after this.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded liberal American. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. to the Aggressive Progressive, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, talking about the United States Supreme Court and also about the decision of George Mason Law School, right in my neck of Virginia, to rename itself the Antonin Scalia School of Law, the ASSOL. You can pronounce it. It's what I think of Antonin Scalia. This truly was an abomination on the court. Antonin Scalia did everything he could to make life harder for people who were non-white, non-straight, non-Catholic, not what he was. He did his very best to remake the country in his image, and to do so, frankly, in flagrant violation of both constitutional principles, logic, and the right of Americans to vote, to choose who they wanted. So to name this wonderful law school in his honor is going to really, it's going to pose some burdens on me. What do I do with friends of mine that graduated from that law school? I'm going to encourage them never to give a donation to George Mason again. I'm going to tell everyone on the air, if you, whether you're connected to George Mason or not, don't give them a penny. And the reason why we shouldn't give them any money is because this was bought. The Koch brothers spent $10 million saying, you've got to rename it by Scalia or we won't give you the cash. And some anonymous donor gave $20 million to name it after Antonin Scalia. I assume if someone gave $40 million to rename it the Adolf Hitler School of Law, the George Mason would say, yes, yes, give us the money, and George Mason. Heil Hitler, I guess. The question is everything up for sale? And the answer is yes, and I don't care to help such an institution like that. It happens to be a public institution. It gets money from the state. So I'm going to be against giving money to George Mason. And I hate to say that because I know people who went there. I know good people who are professors there. I know good people who are students there. It's like a cancer, though. You've got to kill it in order to have it survive. And I'm going to do my best to encourage people not to give any money. If we give less than $30 million to the George Mason School, now called the Antonin Scalia School, then, maybe they'll recognize they made the wrong decision. It's a shame that money should make the decision, though. And that's another question I have for you, in addition to questions about the Supreme Court. When should monetary gifts be sufficient to change the name of a school? Or should it ever? Should it make any time? You know, I admit I wouldn't mind if someone gave money to rename it the Thurgood Marshall School of Law or the Louis Brandeis School. There is a Brandeis School of Law. There are certainly the Ginsburg School of Law, Ruth Bader Ginsburg School of Law. I could see how some conservatives wouldn't like that. But what do you think about this in general? How do you deal with a country that basically glorifies a really nasty human being who did a lot of harm to a lot of good people and does so for money? I'm glad Scalia's off the court. America can finally be out from under his tyranny. I'm glad he's gone. 888-48-MARK, 888-48-6275. We'll be right back right after this.
And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, talking about the future of the United States Supreme Court with Scalia gone and the legacy of Antonin Scalia, who apparently is going to get a law school in Virginia, public law school, renamed in his honor for the mere cost of $30 million. And the anonymous donor who gave $20 million and the Koch brothers who gave another $10 million all said they wouldn't give the money unless the school was renamed. So now, graduates of a school dedicated originally to George Mason, one of the author of the Virginia Declarations of Rights and Freedoms, the forerunner of the Bill of Rights, of the First Amendment and the others, George Mason's out the window. Scalia's here, whether we like it or not. Let's go to, we got Helen, Michael, and Dave. Let's go first to Helen in Ithaca, line 2. Hey, Helen, how are you?
Hey, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm good. Welcome.
Yeah, that's a great idea. The Adolf Hitler School of Law.
It only cost you $50 million, Helen. Only cost you $50 million. I got outbid Scalia. Oh, the Charles Manson School of Law. That might be interesting.
The what?
Charles Manson School of Law.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's still in the slammer, I think.
Right. Exactly. Well, Scalia would have given him a gun. So.
Or the Adolf Hitler School of Fine Arts or School of Painting.
Because Hitler was a painter. That's true. He was not a very good one. But
on a more serious note, there was someone who I thought would have been great. You were talking about the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
And a week ago, you know, this is Wednesday, last Wednesday, which what was it, the 11th or something?
Mm-hmm.
The 11th, okay. One of the finest, and you, I know you are an attorney. You went to law school.
I did.
One of the finest attorneys that existed in my lifetime, I think his name is Michael Ratner, and he was the president of the Center for Constitutional Rights.
That's right. He's the one, he got rights to prisoners from Guantanamo Bay. He stopped New York's stop and frisk policy. And he happens to be the brother of a woman I know quite well who lives in Washington, D.C. and runs Talk
Ellen,
Radio News Service. Ellen Ratner.
Ellen, yeah.
Yeah.
And he also was the president of the European Center for Constitutional and Human Rights. So he took everyone under his wing. It didn't matter what their status in life was, what their race was, what their ethnicity was. And this guy fought so hard, and he died way too young. He was 72.
Right.
Died from complications from cancer.
Yeah.
And
My condolences to his sister Ellen, to the rest of his family. But you're absolutely right. He was a giant in the constitutional law, and one of the reasons is because Michael Ratner, like many of us, thought that the role of the Constitution is to protect individuals, to protect their rights, to protect their equality from the tyranny of the majority. That's what it's about. It's not about using the Constitution to persecute a minority the way Scalia felt the Constitution was about.
He took on cases that had no precedent. He took on people from all over the frickin' world. It wasn't just Americans. And also, he did those great things. And he did a little small good thing to me. There was a book that he was publishing that wasn't out in the bookstores yet. So mm-hmm. I called the Center for Constitutional Rights that I had. Now I'm re-joining the place. But so I called up and I said, can I just, order this from you? And they said, it was a female voice, she said, okay. And I said, well, how much will it be, the book and the shipping, et cetera? And she said, zero. And I said, pardon? I didn't, and she said, no, it's our gift to you, because we were chatting about politics. And
because Michael Ratner cared more about helping people than about profit. And that's, I think, exactly.
Yeah, well, he needed to help me. I could have paid for the book.
Well, I understand, but spreading ideas.
I got this book in the mail for free, and they had to pay $10 to ship it to me. And it says, to Helen, with great pleasure and solidarity, !! Michael.
Very
and
nice.
He has the most beautiful cursive penmanship. And so he did even little tiny things.
There you go. Well, thanks for calling in, Helen, and thanks for honoring Michael Ratner in his memory in that way. He was an exceptional person, and we will all mourn his loss.
Should have been on the Supreme Court.
Yeah, I hear you. Thanks, Helen. Let me go to Michael in Los Angeles on line one. Hey, Michael, how are you?
We're good. How are you doing, sir?
I'm all right. What's up?
Well, it doesn't really surprise me that the Koch brothers are involved.
In renaming George Mason School into the Scalia School.
There's another
$20 million from an anonymous donor that we don't even know who it is, and they won't tell us who it is.
I'm sure that other $20 million came from one of their other parties.
Who knows? For all we know, it came from Vladimir Putin, who agreed with Scalia on so many things.
Yeah, well, like I said, for a long time, I mean, we've all gone under the golden rule. He who owns the gold makes the rules. So, I mean, everybody's got their price.
I do hope you're talking sarcastically, because it's I think it's really shameful for particularly for a school that is, you know, dedicated to one of the founders, who very much brought us the Bill of Rights that I think Scalia shamefully desecrated, to rename
right.
this school George Mason to Anton Scalia. And I don't know where it stops. If he who makes the gold makes the rules, again, where does it stop? Can we have the Benito Mussolini School of Law? I mean, can we have?
I'm sure if the Koch brothers are involved, I'm sure we will very soon.
Yeah. I mean, it's really scary. I mean, there's really two issues here, I guess. One is the general problem that everyone has, and that colleges have, where people give money and they name a building for someone, and you know, I guess I got a little bit less of a problem with that than naming an entire law school. There are very few law schools in the nation, by the way, that are named for an individual. There are a few though. There's some ones that...
Well, it's just because the check hasn't cleared yet.
Well, I guess not, but they're ones I respect. You know, there's the Brandeis School of Law. There's the Benjamin Cardozo School of Law. And then there's the Jerry Falwell School of Law, Liberty University. Even that's not doesn't use his name. And
hold
I have to tell
on,
you
wait,
something.
Wait.
If somebody comes from Liberty University and were applying to work for me as a lawyer, I would throw his resume in the trash can or her resume. I wouldn't care how good a lawyer they were. I would know that they put their ideology ahead of the Constitution, that they believed in theocracy, that they believed that America should follow the Bible rather than the Constitution, and I wouldn't get past that name. Liberty University, trash. And that's what's going to happen now to graduates
right, exactly.
of the Anton Scalia Law School.
Sir.
Yeah. I mean, they're harming themselves. What they're doing is they're devaluing the degree of everyone. And I think they need to give every single student who requests it a refund of their tuition. And, yeah, that's going to be $1 billion. But so what?
Oh,
they need to refund it because they didn't know that their degree would become worthless. They didn't know that. So I think they need
you
to do that.
You think that's going to happen, though?
No, I don't. But I think we need to talk about it because I think people – I have friends that went to that law school, good friends. And now they're ashamed. I mean, I guess it's okay because their degree still says George Mason School of Law, which I guess no longer exists. But still, I mean, it's anyone. I'll tell you this: no one should apply there now, folks. If you're a young law student and you want to go to this law school, withdraw. If you're at the law school, transfer. We need to leave this like I said, like a cancer. Just sort of isolate it and let it die. And go to many
right.
other fine law schools in Virginia, in Washington, D.C. But we need to make clear that this person does not represent our values. And not only that, doesn't represent the law, doesn't represent the Constitution. This Scalia hated a lot of the Constitution. He certainly hated the Second Amendment. We talked about how he did that one. He hated the Equal Protection Clause. He's the one that found that the Voting Rights Act doesn't apply. Now, we have the 14th Amendment, which was designed to help African Americans become full citizens. And he basically says that even though the Voting Rights Act, passed originally by Lyndon Johnson, reaffirmed almost unanimously by Congress after Congress for 25 years, he said, you know what? I don't want to treat black people equally. Screw that. I don't care anymore. Racism's over. Well, I don't know why Anton Scalia gets to decide unilaterally that racism's over, but he did. And this is not a guy that I would respect anyone coming from that university. To me, it's like Jerry Falwell University, right in the trash.
Sir.
I appreciate that. Hey, thanks for your call, Michael. Have you called him before?
No, sir. First time.
All right. Love first-time callers. Thanks for listening in. Appreciate it. Let me go to Dave in Humboldt County, who, unlike Michael, is a longtime caller who's been calling into my show for, 12 years or so. Welcome back to the Inside Scoop, yep. Dave.
Clearly not a first-time caller, but Mark, it remains my feeling, my belief, that the big, powerful special interests, the corporate neocon folks, have grabbed control over this country, the government. They do not want anything like an honest person who cares about the people in power.
No, of course not. It's very hard to enrich yourself off honest politicians. You really need corrupt ones. Speaking of that, by the way, we now learned that there's this mafia guy that has close connections to Donald Trump. That's on the front page of the Washington Post. That'll be interesting. But call me unsurprised.
And that includes the Supreme Court. They don't want anybody there that can issue rulings in favor of the people and not them. And so
they really don't. And that's why I'm actually hopeful, because I do trust the four liberals on the court. I really think they're all good, decent people who do care about the Constitution and the people more than they do about corporations. And we are going to get a fifth. And whether it's Merrick Garland, who I think is a decent man, or whether it's a younger, even more progressive person that Hillary Clinton might appoint when she becomes president, I think that the reign of terror that began when the late, great, incredible jurist Thurgood Marshall was replaced by a very untalented, sexual harassing guy by the name of Clarence Thomas. And really from 91 till 2016, I think those 25 years will be remembered as the 25 years of darkness, or the 25 years of ignoring the Constitution. I think that generation is over. And again, whether it's Obama's pick or Hillary Clinton's pick, it's nice to be optimistic for once. And I do think we're going to get a better court eventually, if not this year, next year.
I hope you'll think with me on this, because it's been plaguing me for a long time, and you might have a thought, at least think about it for a while, and that is, what can we do to turn this reality around, that these neocons have grabbed so much power? And you now have a big voice. You have a lot of people that hear you. And you are in a position to help enact laws to try to turn it around some. But I think I ask the most of your listeners that wonder, what can I do to help end this greedy corporate power?
I'll tell you what you do. You vote and help others vote at all levels of government. First of all, for the President of the United States. I don't care whether you voted for Bernie or voted for Hillary. Whoever wins the nomination, I do think it's going to be Hillary. But whoever it is, you've got to work really, really hard to get that Democratic nominee elected against Donald Trump. And that means not just voting. That's the mere minimum. But registering others to vote, convincing friends of yours who are immigrants and never got citizenship to become citizens, encouraging people who are citizens to register to vote, getting those college students, those same ones that go to the rallies, to actually register to vote, driving them to the polls, calling people on election day, and not just the federal level. You've got, because I think we're going to win the presidency, but we've got to win Congress back. There's only so much a president. Look at how weak President Obama has been with a Republican Congress. We need a Democratic Congress. So that means electing your senators. If you live in California, as you do, Dave, you've got two good senators, although I think you've got a race coming up. But elect your member of Congress at the federal level. And don't stop there. Please, please, folks, remember your state and local races. I am a state official. I am a state representative in the Commonwealth of Virginia. And people don't even know who their state representatives are, but they're crucial. They're the ones who draw those gerrymandering lines, and they can draw the lines to favor Republicans or to favor Democrats. Vote for Democrats at the state and local level. Get involved. Help elect them. The state houses are the real secret of democracy, because people follow their members of Congress usually, and they often follow who their governors are. They certainly follow who the president is. But a lot of times they don't look down there and see who their state representative is, who their state senator is, who their state delegate is. Get involved in those races. We can change this country, but only if everybody gets involved. And I have to say something. Going to a protest is fine. Marching the street is fine. Nothing wrong with that. But if that's all you do, then you're doing a disservice to your country. You got to get there, join your local Democratic Party. If you think that they're not liberal enough, then press them for resolutions to make it more liberal. But get out there and elect progressives, elect liberals, elect Democrats at the federal, state, and local levels. And we've really got to get people riled up, because it's not just this year. In Virginia, we vote next year, 2017. This has got to be a continual thing. I think we're going to get some movement on the Supreme Court. We got to get movement in Congress. That's my speech. You've heard it before, Dave, but you asked, so I gave it to you again.
Thank you for that. We have a few great candidates running, but I, as you know, have no faith at all in this electronic voting, and I some way hope we can get rid of that.
Well, I think I told you, Dave. I don't know if I told you this. I think I told you. In Virginia, I'm proud to say, in my very first year, and I've only been a delegate now for 6 months, not even, actually, I was sworn in January, 4 months, I got a bill passed with some colleagues to end all electronic voting without a paper record in Virginia by 2020. Now, my bill would have done it by next year, 2017. I had to compromise to get it passed and move it to 2020. So it's I agree, it's 4 years too late. But it will happen. It is law. It was signed by the governor. And in Virginia, we will have no hackable voting machines 4 years from now. Again, I would have preferred next year, but it's still a pretty big deal for me as a freshman to get that passed. So, Dave, when you and I first talked on the air 12 years ago, we talked about these hackable voting machines, and I'm very proud to say that at least in my home state, in Virginia, in 4 years, we are finally getting rid of them, Dave. So your and my communication over a dozen years has had at least that small impact on the world, I'm proud to say.
Hallelujah. I wish you could have made it retroactive, Mark. Thank you for doing it.
Thank you, David. Thanks for calling in for all these years. Folks, we're going to take a break. 888-488-MARK if you want to call in. 888-488-6275. We'll be right back right after this. Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Got just a few minutes left talking about the future of the Supreme Court. I probably shouldn't be quite so complacent. I have admittedly assumed that we will elect a Democrat this fall because I find it inconceivable that America would choose Donald Trump. Then again, I felt it inconceivable that the Supreme Court would overrule the American people and, with Antonin Scalia's help, choose George W. Bush to be president over the people's choice, Al Gore, the one chosen by the popular vote and by the electoral vote had they actually counted all of Florida's votes. Obviously, with a Hillary Clinton presidency comes a good member of the U.S. Supreme Court, the end of 25 years of darkness, a chance finally to put individual rights first and the language and text of the Constitution first and the conservative agenda later. But I should note that Donald Trump has already put out his share of Antonin Scalia's. He has put out a list of judges that he might appoint to the U.S. Supreme Court. This is highly unusual. In fact, I would argue it's a desperate move, kind of like when Ted Cruz picked Carly Fiorina to be his vice president, even though he hadn't won and was losing the nomination. I think it's fair to say that Donald Trump's putting out this list means that he realizes that he's way behind in the election. He's trying to appeal to right-wing conservatives, and he's picked names off, well, a conservative wish list, people that Democrats have opposed, like William Pryor, for example, some of the others. One is a wife of a right-wing talk show host. He had joked about putting his sister on. The irony is his sister isn't so bad, but he's trying to appeal to the conservatives. The future of the Supreme Court, I guess, is in your hands. It does depend on whether you get out there and you support the Democratic nominee. And let me give a special word to those of you that supported Senator Bernie Sanders. He obviously won Oregon last night. He lost Kentucky. He got four more delegates than Hillary Clinton, but that's not near enough to overtake the 283 delegate lead. In fact, Sanders is way behind Hillary Clinton. In fact, much farther behind than Hillary Clinton was to Barack Obama at this age. I do think Hillary Clinton's going to win the nomination. And when she does, I truly hope that the Bernie Sanders supporters will come around and strongly support her, as I would do if Bernie Sanders won the nomination. We've got to be united as a party. We've got to get rid of Donald Trump. And we've got to have a Supreme Court that cares about individual rights in the future. This is Mark Levine, signing off.